Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 453. In this episode, Scott talks with award-winning animator Rachel Neighbors about the current state of web animation.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with animations expert Rachel Neighbors. Hi.
Hi, Scott. How are you today?
I am very well and so happy to be talking to you in our home of Portland, Oregon.
Ah, Portland, the dream of the 90s, is alive and well here.
That's true, where young people go to retire.
I don't feel like I've retired yet, but maybe one day.
Well, you're doing some amazing stuff. You've got kind of an animation think tank going on here in Portland.
That's true. I actually moved to Portland to start my company, Tin Magpie, which basically when I started it, I said, I want to do something that involves animation all the time because I'm kind of a web animations wonk. And once I fell in love, started seeing the specs that were coming out in the nightlies, I just couldn't keep away from it. I started back in comics way back in the day and ended up in web comics, which ended up in web design, which ended up in front end development. And now I'm here with animation. I've been here, there, and everywhere. And I've learned so much over the years. It's time to start sharing it.
Well, you've been doing animation for 15 years. I mean, I've done a couple of code pens and I've played around with animation, but you've got a decade and a half of experience in the space.
Well, that's true. I started out actually in comics, making cartoons, and I had a very popular weekly cartoon amongst teenage girls right up till I quit the industry in 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I won an award, and the first thing I did was like, I'm changing industries. I'm going to web development. See you guys later. Bye. I feel like such a bad person for doing that
sometimes.
That's
what all award winner, as soon as I get my Oscar, I'll be like, I'm done acting. I made my point.
Oh my God, Scott, you better never stop acting.
I want to be like Whoopi Goldberg, like just get one of each. What is it called? The EGOT, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony, and then just quit the industry and just say, I win.
Yeah, screw you guys. Gonna go do what I want.
So you're doing animation, and you just mentioned the nightlies. When you say nightlies, you're talking about nightly builds of browsers as we put new features in.
Yes, and even just some of the things like with CSS animations that are hidden behind vendor prefixes. Back in the day, CSS animations were sometimes only available behind nightly builds, or now on a few browsers you can use them every day using a vendor prefix, specifically iOS Safari still requires WebKit. Mm-hmm. So these things are not all of them quite so esoteric, but when it comes to one animation tool in particular, the Web Animation API, it's still very much most of its best features are coming out in nightly builds of Firefox and Chrome. There are some pieces that you can use in production, but it's still very much under wraps.
How many different, if you think about the web as platform, how many different animation APIs are there? Because when you say web animations API, I'm not sure I understand that as it relates to CSS animation.
It's the one API to rule them all. So have you heard of Smile, S-M-I-L?
I have heard of it.
So Smile is a language for manipulating SVG, right?
Right.
And CSS is a declarative language for manipulating DOM elements.
Right.
And sometimes SVG, because SVG is DOM elements.
True.
Now, the Web Animation API actually is an API for manipulating the rendering engine that performs both of those animations. Mm. So CSS animations, built on the Web Animations API. CSS transitions, built on the Web Animations API.
That's true now?
Well, it's going to be true very soon. The API is still being implemented in, for instance, I believe that's true in Chrome, and it's starting to be true in Firefox. Don't paraphrase me here, people. Go out, do your own research. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to things like Internet Explorer and Safari, they have no support for the API. So transitions, smile, animations, all of those have their own separate little modules running their animations. They're not united under this one API yet.
So is the idea to, like you just said, unite all of these APIs? And this is the middle layer. You said that CSS animations would be built on top of this. So it's almost like as OpenGL is kind of like the most, you know, it's low level and you build 3D engines on top of that. But if you know OpenGL, you feel comfortable with all these other different engines. If I understand the Web Animations API, I'll feel comfortable animating pretty much anything on the web.
Ideally, that's how it would work out.
Mm-hmm. And this is happening right now as we speak?
It is. It is. One API to rule them all. What's really great about it is it allows for a lot more. Now, I know we don't like to talk about Flash. That's still a dirty word, but Flash had a lot of really cool things going for it, especially in ActionScript and some of the libraries like GreenSock that were created around it,
mm-hmm.
like TweenLight, etc. There were things like nested timelines so that you could have multiple animations running on a, like dependent on each other's timelines.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's really hard to do with declarative CSS because everything runs on the browser's timeline and there's only one timeline. This means if something's a little slow to load or render, it's completely out of whack with the rest of page. So I did a really cool demonstration of syncing timelines using the Web Animation API's polyfill in my latest Smashing Magazine article, which is called The State of the Animation, which is based on a talk that I gave about animation.
Hmm. And I'm sure people can find this online at your site?
Yes. Okay. RachelNabors.com. That's RachelNabors, like Jim Nabors.
And I'll put links to all of this so that folks who are following along can find those.
Yes. All my talks, slides, articles, everything are at that site. It's pretty awesome.
So you said that's a polyfill for that. So this means that I can start thinking about the Web Animations API now?
Yes, absolutely. The polyfill was, unfortunately, the polyfill is not nearly as performant as you would like it to be in browsers that don't support the Web Animation API. But the point is that it allows you to start working with the syntax today and start figuring out how, say, if you're, say, an animation library developer, you might use this polyfill. I mean, you might use this API to help increase the speed of your operations and offer future forward compatibility.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you could put a few things into context for me because we understand HTML and the DOM. I think people who are listening have gotten that far.
Right.
And we understand when you put, you know, declarative transforms and animations and things in CSS where that lives. And we understand that JavaScript has APIs that allow you to manipulate the DOM. But when you say this Web Animations API, this is something that's in the DOM that I manipulate with JavaScript or it's in CSS. Where does this thing live? Put it in context of the other three technologies.
So your browser has a rendering engine that paints things on the screen. And the Web Animation API actually, it kind of lays bare the CSS's rendering engine. Well, the same rendering engine that SVG animations and CSS uses. It opens it up for you to manipulate with JavaScript.
Mm.
So you can tell it, you know, I want to rewind the clock on all these animations. I want to create a new animation object here. I want to clone this one at this point. There's all kinds of crazy things that you can do. Really exciting. That you used to only be able to do with something like Flash or with really complex JavaScript libraries. So this should hopefully take a lot of should hopefully slim down JavaScript libraries that animate things and increase performance across the board.
So it sounds like these are fundamental animation concepts, not web concepts, but like, you know, atoms at the root of what, mm-hmm. like this is how animation is done. And the web just didn't have any technologies to allow you to do that. And people were making polyfills because like, hey, you know, we really need multiple timelines. That's how we those who are in animation yourself, yeah. do things. But the web wasn't coming along for the ride.
No, when we weren't, we kind of let go of Flash a little prematurely. It was going to happen eventually. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research for that article and talk on the state of the animation. I spoke with a lot of people, a lot of interaction developers who worked with Flash, a lot of library developers who've made these great JavaScript libraries for animating things without Flash or without the Web Animation API. And It sounds like Flash, unfortunately, was ejected a little prematurely. The web wasn't quite ready to start thinking about animation. And for a while, you can definitely see that web design and development stepped back to a more state-based, copy-based scenario. And that's been great. It's been great for typography, typography-based specs, for layout specs, but it means that animation was sidelined and in many cases stigmatized because our community has this rather cliquish tendency to ostracize and make fun of things deemed unworthy. And as soon as Flash became unworthy, all the wonderful interaction rock stars were just kind of, you know, their one of their big tools is being made fun of at, you know, the butt of a joke at every conference ever. It doesn't really help bring unity or sharing knowledge. So Flash went through an exile. It was disbanded. It was cast out. It became the butt of the jokes at conferences. And that was hard on the Flash development community. I started running into people who just quit web entirely and like had their midlife crisis and stopped doing ActionScript and opened up a motorcycle repair shop. True story. And so, unfortunately, because of Flash becoming a dirty word, the web community has lost a lot of veteran knowledge about animation and performance and the way you code and write user interfaces and things for that we really could benefit from right now. And right,
These were experts in animation as a practice, not Flash experts.
Well, some of them were Flash experts, but quite a few of them were also experts in animation and animating things for the web, the technicalities of that, both from an aesthetic perspective, but also from a very hardcore, like, performance perspective. Mm. We lost a lot of niche knowledge by alienating these people from our community, and it was very dangerous to do that, and we probably... I hope we've learned a lesson from that and will not do that to other such subsects in the future.
It seems like when we ejected those people, we didn't have a waiting API ready for them yet. Like there wasn't an obvious place for them to transfer all of their knowledge. There was no CSS 3 yet. There was no, you know, CSS animations yet.
It's true. It happened very prematurely. In fact, the iOS Safari team railroaded their own syntax for CSS animations and transitions specifically so people could make websites for iPhones and iPads that looked as good as native apps. And the standards community is still a little sore about that one.
Yeah. So speaking of the standards community and what are coming, you were at Chrome Dev Summit.
Absolutely.
And you're seeing what's coming. You're seeing the nightlies, or more than the nightlies.
It was very exciting. I've been to a lot of conferences this year, and conferences are wonderful, and I absolutely love going to them, and I love hearing what people are up to. But I gotta say, the content's usually about 6 months behind, because this is something, a project that's been finished, or something somebody started like months ago. So it's not exactly the bleeding edgiest of stuff that person could learn about. So it was really exciting to go to Chrome Dev Summit, which is where Google opens up a part of its Mountain View campus, invites all of the people who love Chrome and build things for the web to come listen to the Chrome developers talk about what's in the hopper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Kool-Aid is delicious, and I drank quite a bit of it, and it was tasty, and I thanked them for it. Chrome takes animation very seriously, which is difficult because right now, the people who are building browsers, they all have different interests. Now, for people like you and I who build things for the web, and I'm assuming your listeners, we build things for the web, and, you know, oh, so-and-so doesn't, you know, Safari doesn't have this API yet. Oh, Safari, hurry it up. And it's frustrating, but you have to remember where these companies make their money. Google makes money from the internet. The more people who use the internet as their preferred destination for content when they open up their computers, the more money Google is going to make. So it can pour money and resources onto its Chrome dev team. And the Chrome Dev Summit is sort of like a showcase of where your advertising dollars are being spent.
Here's why more eyeballs will be on the internet because of what we're building.
And they are as interested and excited about animation as I am. And that makes me happy because unfortunately, you've got Mozilla development going on, right? It's largely driven by contributions from the open source community. and the web animation API that I'm so excited about that has paid developers working on implementing it in Chrome Nightlies, well, it relies quite a bit in Mozilla on the kindness of C++ developers who are volunteering their time. And let's put it this way, C++ developers who have time to volunteer typically aren't aware of or interested in animating things. They, I think I may have mentioned this earlier, but the people who need animation the most are often the ones who are the least likely to be able to implement it on a code base. So it's exciting to see what Chrome is working on. I wish that some of the things that they prioritize would be prioritized in the same way by other manufacturers of browsers, such as Internet Explorer and Safari. But you have to remember that Apple's, the people behind Safari and Microsoft behind Internet Explorer, their major revenue doesn't come from making the web the number one destination. In fact, in Apple's case, you could say that with their eagerness to have apps be your number one source of content because it directly makes them money, that having a really nice browser for people to use is kind of antithetical to their baseline.
Right. Other than add to home screen, there's little reason for them to make it easier for us to make web apps on mobile Safari.
Exactly.
So what kind of people did you meet at the Chrome Dev Summit and that blew your mind?
Well, I got to meet one of the best. I love a lot of the people who work over at Google with Chrome. But I was excited to meet specifically someone new. Roma Shah, the UX lead on the Polymer project's materials design.
Polymer.
Yeah. Polymer is it's a set of things that Google has released for people. And I don't want to go on about it too much because it's hard for me to phrase it. But there are a bunch of polyfills, including the web animation API's polyfill, sprung forth from this project. Mm-hmm. And there are polyfills for Shadow DOM and web components. And those are all going to live at webcomponents.org. So there will be less conflation of the two projects in the future.
Okay.
Materials design is sort of like the theme for Polymer Project. You can think of Polymer Project is to, Polymer Project is to building web apps what Twitter Bootstrap is to building websites. Mm. And materials design is sort of the theme that Polymer Project comes with. Once again, do your own research. I'm probably getting it totally pigeoned here. But this is how I understood it after the Chrome Dev Summit. It's all very exciting, but the materials design is really exciting because this is the first time, at least in recent record, that a large company has come forward and made animation not just, you know, a part of something it's building, but a feature. Hmm. Materials design documentation has an entire section on meaningful transitions, and the interface is completely animated. And I got to speak to the UX lead, Roma, the woman who could speak most to why it was animated. And that was really exciting. It was exciting to talk with her because she talked about, she answered all of my questions that I asked online. And she said, when asked, like, what advice she'd give people to using animation in an interface, her response was that you should exercise deliberateness. You should be very deliberate about using animation. Mm. And that if you don't understand why you should animate something or, you know, how you should animate something, you shouldn't be animating it, period. Mm. So anytime I'm doing an interview like this, if we're taking online questions from people like with Twitter, I will inevitably get somebody out there who's like, can you recommend some CSS animation libraries so I can add some razzle dazzle to my web pages? I think Roma would be like, no.
So razzle dazzle is not the goal.
Razzle dazzle is not the goal, which brings me to a thought I had. Lately, we're talking more and more about animation, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about it. I train people and companies, teams, how to use animation for the betterment of the users. Mm-hmm. But I want to make sure that your listeners have a small word of warning.
Okay.
A lot of rhetoric has been going around about making things delightful with animation. And while it's true that animation can be delightful, it can be delightful in the same way that a font can be whimsical or delightful, or a color layout can be pleasing. That shouldn't be your first reason for doing an animation. Mm. I wrote an article for A List Apart where I outlined 6 principles of UI animation. And these are very important principles, like They talk about like using animation to show people their location on a page, progress through a linear sequence. They're wonderful. You need to check them out. I illustrated them all with animations because you shouldn't write an article about animation without animation in it.
We appreciate that.
And the fun thing is that I like to tell people, if you're going to animate something, you need to make sure that it meets at least two of those principles.
Mm.
And the third one can be delight. If something should first be useful before it is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a Shaker saying, you know, like if you make something, how's it go? If you make something, it must first be useful. But if it is useful, why not should it also be beautiful?
Mm.
So something can be beautiful if it is useful, but it shouldn't just exist for beauty in and of itself. All things take time. They take time for you to build them. They take time and energy for them to run.
Mm-hmm.
They should have purpose behind that. I understand that delightful things may give people a small little, oh, how lovely. But that shouldn't be the only reason they're there. And also, kind of like those load screens before you're playing a video game, they get old a lot faster. If a feature only exists because it's delightful, there's a good chance people are going to want to hit skip intro really fast.
Absolutely. I've had a number of times where it's like the first time you see that animation, it's like, oh, neat. And it's like, oh, there's that freaking animation again. It's in my way. It's that animation is standing between me and my task.
Exactly. This is one of the reasons why in traditional animation, there's this wonderful, wonderful saying when it comes to timing things, because you've got these animators who are drawing frame by frame a person doing something, and they're in this whole other time space. They're like in time dilation.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have to figure out how long should this animation run for, when they finished, you know, drawing the woman moving from point A to point B, how long should this last? How long do you think it should last? You have that time, and then you have it again. Mm-hmm. And that's how long it should last. So if you've got something in your prototype that looks good to you at 1 second, it should be running at 0.25 seconds. And that makes it so that the untrained eye, the person who hasn't been looking at it for, you know, like days, doesn't actually see it. It doesn't come out and say, hello, I'm animating. Aren't you happy I'm animating in front of you? Look at me taking you from state A to state B. It should get out of their way. And that usually means a very quick animation.
It seems like often when I'm on a smaller device or a constrained device, I can tell that they wanted an animation to go a certain way, but maybe it'll stutter and it pulls me right out of the illusion. Like there's no way to know if there's a frame, like how many frames per second it's running. I just know it's wrong. It doesn't feel right as a user.
Well, that's another interesting thing. So the human eye, when it comes to a computer screen, when you're looking at a film, it's about 25 frames per second, or FPS.
Yeah, 24, I think, is what regular film, not digital.
Yeah. I like film at a beautiful old theater like we have here in Portland.
Yes. So, the Roseway.
Oh, wonderful. So, but the on your computer screen, it's about 60 frames per second to make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more, though, is if you can't consistently stay at 50 frames per second, if you've got big dips going down to 30 frames per second, that momentary dip, that jank, will totally pop people out of the illusion.
That's what it's called. That's called jank. I've heard that word term janky.
Yes. That's what we're talking about when we say something's janky. There's jitter, stutter on the screen. So interestingly enough, though, people's eyes are more likely to pick out a difference in frames per second than they are to notice a lower frame per second. For instance, you could give someone an animation if you could somehow sense, and I'll talk about this in a moment, if you could somehow sense that the device couldn't perform at 60 frames per second regularly, maybe it's an underpowered device, maybe it's got a lot of background processes going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you could scale that back, throttle it back to 35 frames per second, people would be a lot more accepting. Their eyes and minds would be more accepting of that than they would be of 60 frames per second interspersed with janky moments where it goes to 35 frames per second.
I see. So consistently slow. If I can be, like you say, 24.97 consistently, that's much better than being 60 and then 5 and then 15.
Exactly. And it's interesting because I did hear a little bit about some things that the Chrome developers are working on that might help us do that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
The frame timing API, I believe Paul Lewis spoke about it for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an API that's in the works, but that means it could be like, who knows, might be implemented tomorrow, kind of like a will change in CSS.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a frame timing API that basically can measure how many frames per second a certain period of time resulted in. So you could like imagine having a spinner on a page using the frame timing API to check how many frames per second that spinner is running at. Mm-hmm. And then using that logic, say, well, this person's frames per second were really low, so we're going to throttle it back to a 35 frames per second animation. Or, you know, oh, this is great, we'll give them the full experience. Or maybe, oh, this is terrible, we're just going to not animate anything on this page. That is wonderful. I've heard people who've been developing mobile sites for Android for mm-hmm. ages complain that while the browser might say it can handle CSS animations, the browser can't render them for anything.
I see. So you're basically saying, to that point of intentionality, that I intend this animation to behave this way, regardless of what the browser specs say. If the reality is I can't get my 30 or my 60 frames a second, then I'm going to use an entirely different interaction model.
Yeah. Or, you know, just kind of, gracefully degrade the interactions you had planned. Like, maybe mm-hmm. they don't need that parallax. Mm. And the neat thing is, imagine that you could also, like, I want to hopefully build a little library for this, if this, as a tin magpie project, release it into the wild, mm-hmm. if no one else does, once the frame timing API gets out there, it would be nice to tie that into something like the battery life API. So mm-hmm. if somebody only has 20% of their juice left, you're not, you know, providing unnecessary repaints in their browser.
That would be so nice. It just seems like we spend all this time now in our devices, whether it be an Android or the new iOS 8, where it says this is using this much battery and this is using that much battery. But I would be more likely to go to a mobile website that used less battery life. Like, I don't know if CNN.com isn't destroying my battery life. Like, they might be using jQuery and not CSS animations. They may be on the CPU and not the GPU. I'd like to know those kinds of things. And if this animation could stop because I'm at, you know, 2% battery and I'm trying to get home, then that'd be amazing.
It would be. And, you know, just crazy, wonderful things are happening. I also heard about Project Ganesh, which it's cool because there are some people who used to work for game companies who, I know this because we used to go to their game night back in Raleigh before we moved to Portland, but mm-hmm. They work for Google on the rendering engine now. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at, like, back in the days when people were first building browsers, we thought about just putting text on pages, right? Nothing animates unless you're scrolling.
Right.
But now browsers are having to think more like game engines, because now things are more likely to animate not even when people are scrolling, but just when they're sitting still. Mm-hmm. So clever browser vendors are looking at ways that they can start offloading more of that work to the GPU. Very clever animation library developers, especially at certain in-house interactive agencies, have been using loopholes in WebGL to go through the GPU for a lot of page rendering. It's pretty fantastic what people get up to solve their own problems. But mm-hmm. at the Chrome Dev Summit, it was exciting because we heard about Project Ganesh and how...
Is that like the Hindu god Ganesh?
Yes. It is named for that Hindu god. Because I believe the original team was in India.
Okay.
And so... basically, they're talking about doing hardware accelerated rasterization, which is a slightly more niche part of hardware accelerated rendering. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's incredible because they were promising like 60 frames per second should not be a problem, like in another year or so on mobile devices for the Chrome team. That is incredibly exciting from an animation perspective, because a lot of the complaints you hear about, I don't want to use animation because of performance. It's not going to be a problem. The more we use animation, the mm-hmm. more browser vendors optimize for a less state-based and more interactive web.
So it seems like animation is coming back in vogue. We should bring all of these Flash people back who've gone and started their motorcycle repair shops and say, we need you back here. We need your principles of animation to return.
I think it would definitely be good to mine some of those minds for what they know. And they will probably show up in weird and unexpected ways going forward.
Mm-hmm. So people may be listening and saying, well, I work on forms. I just have buttons on my application. You know, why would I bring someone in to train me and teach me about these kind of things? I don't need an intro. Where else would I use animation?
I actually hear that a lot. Like, I'll be at a conference and someone's like, I loved your talk. It was so cool to see what you did. But man, I mean, all I do is, you know, I have this app and there's some buttons people push. I want to say, have you ever used the Evernote app for a native device?
Yeah, it's a great app. It is. It's great. Actually, it's great on every platform.
It is. The Evernote team does a great job at integrating animation with their, with with their designs. For instance, there are three major states in the Evernote app. There's, you're either reading something, looking for something, or you're writing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Evernote, every time you switch between those tasks, it animates you to the new task. You want to write something, the background fades out, and a piece of paper pulls up in front of you. It doesn't just jump cut you to a page where you start typing out input. A lot of apps do that. A lot of websites do that. So here's something very simple. It's forms. This is an input form, and it has been animated into place. I mean, it's interesting because I think a lot, when the iPad first came out, when the iOS first came out, you heard a lot of young and old people say, you know, I love it. It's so intuitive. I love it much more than I love my computer. We have so much research about how animation cuts down on mental processing time and keeps people in their task flow by offloading that sort of busy work, that in-betweening busy work mm-hmm. to their brain's GPU, the visual cortex, that when you're animating it thoughtfully, deliberately, you're thinking about it, you've got this wonderful, quick, get out of your way animation to take people from one state into another.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it feel more useful and usable to them. It wasn't that iOS was, well, I mean, I'm sure its design and everything was great, but perhaps the real reason that we saw young and old users cling and love it so much was because of that deliberate use of animation that not only the operating system used, but also the app developers.
Right. Everything from back, going back to your folders in Mail. It makes me think about even like Windows 95 or Mac System 7. Really, the only animation I can think of was minimizing stuff.
Right.
And there was really no animation anywhere else other than minimizing stuff. But in an iPad or an Android tablet, everything is animated. There's a transition everywhere. You never get as you call it, a jump cut.
Exactly. And the fascinating thing is there are all these papers from like MIT and such from back in like the early and mid 90s where there was an arms race between operating systems to try to get, to try to best each other at having the perfect animated interface so that those edge markets of the young and old mm-hmm. would find it more pleasant and useful to use the webs. I mean, to use the operating system. I think we're facing that in web design right now because now finally we can animate things using HTML, CSS, and JavaScript in ways that previously were only possible using native code or Flash.
Mm-hmm. It seems like we're at the beginning, you think, probably of a renaissance in web animation.
Yeah, well, I would say we're in a renaissance of web design.
Mm.
And we're going to see a big change in how people make websites, probably similar to the kind we saw with responsive web design and responsible web typography. And the web going forward from this point onward is not going to look the way it did 5 years ago.
Very cool. So people can look at your talks and your resources and hire you and your training at rachelneighbors.com?
At rachelneighbors.com. That's RachelNaborS. You can also see my company, Tin Magpie. That's tin like the metal and magpie like the bird at tinmagpie.com.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing all of your information and knowledge about animation today.
It's been great talking with you, Scott. Thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.